Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Terence Corrigan. Today's
Oh, there.
news is talking about a land claim scam. We're also going to be talking a little bit about a new political party emerging on the scene, one we've heard a little bit about in the weeks leading up till now. And we're going to be talking a little bit about the Joburg mayorship race. So let's start off with the first one. This is a story that goes back actually to the 2000s. And a guy called Fred Daniel wanted to buy up a whole bunch of land in Mpumalanga, where he was going to open a large game reserve and conservation area. Well, things were going along. He was buying up the land until someone came to him, a guy with the surname Fisaki, who said basically that the land should be sold to him, and if it wasn't sold to him, that there might be land claims placed on that land. Fred Daniel refused to do this, and very soon afterwards, he began to get in trouble with people who were making land claims on various pieces of land that he had purchased. There were also protests, riots. He says that some of his workers and equipment at his facilities was damaged. He had all sorts of problems. The police appeared to not help. For the most part, he would call them out and they wouldn't seem to protect him very much. And he was essentially told that this kind of thing would continue until he sold the land or settled the land claims. Well, it became very clear soon that politicians were involved and the whole thing ended up in court. Also, at the same time, his plans for the conservation reserve were hampered by his inability to obtain permits for big game animals, including lions, leopards, and elephants. He had to get these permits from the Mpumalanga Tourism and Parks Agency, which kept spuriously denying them. There were various other things. At one point, there was a raid on his properties where some of his animals were taken away, and even one of them was even killed. I think it was a leopard or something that was killed. And this was later found to be a completely spurious raid with no justification for it. Anyway, a judge Tuchen in I think it's the Nelspruit magistrate, the Nelspruit High Court or the Mpumalanga High Court, ruled that Fred Daniels was owed a very significant amount of compensation from public entities, which were essentially running a scam here, where they were manufacturing land claims in order to basically do a kind of mafia style shakedown. Court ordered that the Mpumalanga Tourism and Parks Agency and the Regional Land Claims Commissioner pay Daniel's company a total of 306 million rand, as well as interest backdated to November of 2024 at a rate of 11.5% per annum. The court also awarded costs to him. Now, sadly, the planned conservation project, which would have been probably good for the environment and generated economic activity, was completely abandoned in 2019 when Fred Daniel sold all the land, believing his life would be in danger. The judge was absolutely scathing. And in fact, he named the recently deceased David Mabuza as a sort of prime player in this whole shakedown scheme. According to the judge, the instruction to not have the police assist Daniel could only have emanated from highly placed politician or politicians. When the violence of the day was at its height, it was Mr. Mabuza who came to address the mob and tell them to disperse. The judge found that I therefore hold that a land claim racket was in progress when Mr. Daniel refused to participate in the racket. I hold further that the purpose of the violence was to force Mr. Daniel off his land by threats of violence to him and his property, and that the Land Claims Commission, the organ of the state vehicle of the land claims racket, the South African police, and at least two politicians, Pro Khoza and Mr. Mabuza, both said to have been members of the 25th of the Land Claims Committee, banded together with the common purpose of forcing Mr. Daniel from the project lands. Terence, it's been said many times by people in the kind of ANC, EFF, MK world that the willing buyer, willing seller model doesn't work. And before this was revealed to be a sort of dodgy case, this was in fact identified as a reason of why expropriation needed to happen, because this Daniel guy was messing with communities and refusing to sell. What do you make of this whole thing?
Yeah, look, there's the facts of this case, which, as you say, are damning. Although I don't think anyone should be surprised. There were rumors swirling around David Mabuza when he was in office. So, you know, these even, I think, reached the New York Times. And I think if there was ever a warning sign that the new dawn is going to be a false dawn, it should have been, you know, who accompanied President Ramaphosa into office as his deputy. You know, those with long memories can recall that that environmental conservation authorities in Mpumalanga had a very checkered relationship with probity. And so, you know, no one should be surprised. But what I find the sort of deeper issue there is it points to the not just to an act of, call it, pecuniary corruption, you know, extracting resources or whatever, but the institutional corruption here. That it seems that that the police were prevailed upon not to do their jobs. That bogus organizations were established. That licensing powers were abused, and the whole land claim system here seems to be somewhat hokey, which I think raises an interesting point for people who would defend the use of expropriation and the wielding of state power to address South Africa's uneven distribution of resources. You know, you do realize that you are dealing with this government. This isn't Sweden or South Korea. This is South Africa.
If animal permits can be used as a tool of harassment, then the ability to take away your property most certainly can.
Oh, absolutely. Look, and you know, this is something that I don't think has fully penetrated South Africa's conversation. That it is not just the looting, if you like, the pilfering or the plundering of resources that is the problem. It is the undermining of the institutions that on which a constitutional state depends. You know, As we look to the future, South Africa needs to think in terms not just of reform or fixing these institutions, but fundamentally at their rehabilitation. You know, this is something I think that cuts across the socio-economic or racial experiences of South Africa, that there is a very low level of trust in the police, in part because there's a sense that they don't do their jobs. And, you know, I think that there are nuances to this, but also because all too often police officials are in league with those whom they are meant to police. I mean, we had the first African head of Interpol eventually being forced out, arrested, and remarkably in South Africa convicted.
That being Jackie Salibi.
Correct, yes. You know, right now the Mlanga Commission is hearing some pretty hair-raising testimony. Now these are allegations at the moment, but I think the scary thing is that nobody is surprised or would regard them as incredible, as, you know, beyond what could reasonably be expected. Crime intelligence, which you need to fight organized crime, is, you know, apparently a cesspool of recriminations and, you know, somewhat Hollywood-like in the proliferation of acting positions as others are, you know, suing each other and out on suspension.
I think there's another point to be made here, which is that one of the defenses of expanding the state's expropriation power to include, for example, as we've expropriation without compensation, is that, oh, it's fine. You know, these things still ultimately will go through a court and the courts will make sure that there's no abuses. And I think this case that we're seeing here is yet another example of many of where even when you win in court, the damage to potential investment, the damage to development, and the damage to just simply, you know, your pocketbook is severe. Look, this matter has been going sort of, the trouble sort of started with this in the like 2000s.
20 years.
And it only got ruled on, on the 30th of September, to just last week, when finally the case ended. So, I mean, you know, if this is the kind of legal battle you have to fight to win against abuses of state power, to how many people is this level of justice actually available?
Yeah, well, there's two things I'd like to add. First of all, for those on the, shall we say, the accused side of things, this obvious strategy is just keep kicking the can down the road, because, you know, you might die. The Tembisa Hospital corruption has been much in the news lately, and you know, one of the key accused there, managed to sort of expire at his own pace. The other thing, of course, is that what does that say for the pocketbook of the country? Yes, you know, if you have deep pockets, maybe you can fight this case for 20 years. At the end of it, it's the taxpayer who get to fork out 500 million rand. 400, 500, well, you know, what's 100 million between friends? Interesting thing that that figure of what, half a billion, is what the Ekurhuleni municipality is saying it spends on temporary housing, and that's why it needs to expropriate this property in the Driefontein farm at nil compensation. Now, that is a complicated case, but one just wonders if we weren't having to pay people off, or on court judgments after a 20-year struggle to avoid doing anything, whether maybe you couldn't actually turn that money to better use.
Yeah, and I think it puts it, it really kind of gives a lie to the claim ultimately that South Africa needs these radical steps to do land reform. I mean, the questions about like how urgent a problem land reform is in South Africa, and we've talked about that before, about how most South Africans are actually far more concerned with employment and things like that. But even if you accept it as an important part of South Africa's problems, it's still not clear that competently run this system would not be able to work effectively to actually achieve some of its goals, willing buyer, willing seller model.
I suspect even the most ardent defenders of radical land redistribution, or whatever you want to call it, would concede that, you know, it's been handled in a sort of clown car fashion.
Right. And in this case, giving cover for essentially extortion.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's move on to our next story. So we've heard rumblings and suggestions that this was going to happen over the past couple of weeks, which we have talked about a bit. But finally, it has officially happened. Build One South Africa with Musi Maimane, Good, and Rise Mzanzi have decided that they are all going to be merging together into a political party, new political party to contest the local government elections. Now, they say that they will continue under their current banners to fulfill their mandates from the last national and provincial election, but that going forward they'll sort of all collapse together into this one entity. This new party is going to be called Unite for Change, or Unite for short, and they say that they're going to be presenting what they call a centrist alternative to the ANC, DA, EFF, MK, the big parties of South Africa. One of the leaders speaking from Rise Mzanzi said, "We have to put aside our differences to build an offering that citizens can unite around to bring change and hope to villages, towns, and cities across South Africa. We are united for change under one name, one set of electoral lists, one shared platform, and one purpose." Terence, I think that there's, on paper, some good reasons for this. There's also other reasons lurking in the background, one of which is that there is some speculation that the DA and ANC will pass threshold legislation I don't know if that will actually happen before the next local government elections, but there's some speculation that it could, which will create a threshold for getting into parliament or possibly councils of about 1 or 2%. So you'll have to get above that to get representation. And that because all these parties got sort of below that amount, that this uniting together might be a tactical thing to prevent their extinction. But beyond that, on paper, you know, the idea of having a sort of center-left party formed together, particularly merging a party like Horizon Zanzi with Good, seems reasonable enough. They don't have huge ideological differences between them, all that sort of thing. But in reality, these parties are far more kind of one-man bands, particularly in the case of Bosa and Good, which are centered around Musi Maimane and Patricia de Lille, respectively. And the real question comes, you know, can all of these personalities and sort of different vibes work together? It's interesting, they have not decided, they've decided that they're not going to have a single leader, at least going into the next local government election. What do you make of this?
Look, as a sort of consolidation thing, we've seen this before. The most obvious example, of course, would be the merger of the Democratic Party and the National Party, and the National Party then sloughed off again and went into the ANC. And
there was another party in that merger too to form the DA, wasn't it? Also,
the Federal Party or something. The Federal Alliance. I think there were Federal a couple Alliance, of those, nickels and dimes. I think that Louis Leite, did he not go off to the Freedom Front Plus? I can't remember.
Yeah, he was in the Federal Alliance and then he left as well. So okay. It was a merger where both the participants left.
Yeah. And then Martinus von Skolkweg became the ambassador to Australia, literally packing for Perth. Well, packing for Canberra. Okay. So their reasoning would be that they're not hugely different. You can consolidate and it gives you a better shot in local government elections. I'm not sure just how much benefit they'll get from that, because I suspect that their constituencies will be geographically very specific. You know, if you look at Good, there's a place in the Western Cape where they do extremely well. It's basically Patricia's little stomping ground. That's where she gets her votes from. They get some nickels and dimes elsewhere, but that's the way to it. I would say Horizon Zanzi is Gauteng. Bosa, probably also Gauteng, but I'd need to check that out. Maybe there is a sort of there is a type of voter who would be attracted to this. Maybe that consolidation does give them greater reach. But I think here are the big pitfalls. Good, I think, is fundamentally Patricia de Lille's, you know, latest project. And I think people vote for Good because they like Patricia de Lille. I don't think that there's much more to it than that. I've very, very seldom heard anyone expressing any sort of understanding or appreciation of her policies, except once Richard Calland. But I think for the most part, you know, she's the tough auntie who fights for you or fights for her people. Musi Maimane will build one South Africa with Musi Maimane. I think that there is a great deal of personal investment here, let me put it like that. And I think put these two together, you may have one party, but you've got two fairly, you know, significant egos or fairly significant personalities. You know, perhaps Patricia de Lille could be given, you know, some sort of regional fiefdom. The one I think it actually works least for is probably the one that approaches the most principle, which is Rise and Zanzi, because they have devoted a great deal to trying to build a brand. They have one election, they give up the brand, you know, for UFC, which I think two things. First of all, it's just open season for cartoonists because it sounds like a football club, the United Football Club. And secondly, you know, every ballot sort of has this alphabet soup of parties that, you know, are really not going anywhere. You know, AIU and whatever, NIM, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
UTM.
Exactly. And I think that this is probably just going to be, you know, caught up with that. I also wonder if there maybe isn't a type of cynicism that could go with this. Well, you know, you want something new, but you're recycling, you know, two very much old school people. Patricia Dole's been in Parliament since 1994, if I'm not mistaken. Musi Maimane is certainly no political spring chicken. And, you know, Sangezo Zibi, perhaps, but, you know, now that he's sort of thrown his lot in, he's part of that. So, yeah, also Musi Maimane said, you know, we're not served by small parties or whatever. Well, together you get what, like 5 MPs?
Something like so, that, yes.
Yeah. Look, I don't think this is particularly worth shattering.
All right. I'm pretty much of the same thing. I mean, just sort of while you were talking, I was just double checking the sort of general support levels of these parties. And, you know, Rise Mzansi gets some of its best results in northern suburbs of Joburg, places like around Sandton and Rosebank. Then Bosa and Rise, they get like maybe 0.5% here or there in some of the townships in Gauteng. And then basically, other than the southern suburbs of Cape Town, you don't really see them around too much. Maybe there's a ward or two somewhere where they get slightly better. But yeah, no, this is not a great foundation from which to build. And as you say, they're sort of merging this growing identity, which potentially they could have built from. I mean, you know, they're all part of the GNU. I'm not actually sure if Bosa is, but I know Rise and Good are. It doesn't seem like they've managed to kind of get much from that. So this doesn't seem like a merger of strength. More of one, like I say, I suspect that there's a fear that they might not survive too much longer if they don't mix together. But I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they will prove me wrong.
One thing I will say is that if there is a falling out, I predict Patricia Little will go up and form, you know, Excellent or something like that. You know, she's less a party hopper than a political entrepreneur. And you know, you've got to have a certain respect for that.
It's going to be difficult to come up with a new good name. I mean, Good was quite a fun name, memorable, but I think Excellent's a great name. What was that party made by that guy who special from the ANC recently that are Born to Win, which is an amazing name. But yes, we shall see. Anyway, I think that is all we're going to be chatting about today. There was one more thing, just 1 minute on this one, Terrence. I forgot to include in our discussion of the land stuff, but the Ingonyama Trust, this enormous parcel of land, 2.9 million hectares or something like that. Millions of South Africans live on it. It's effectively state-owned land, although it's kind of held sort of through the Zulu traditional institutions and the monarchy, has failed to submit to Parliament its financial records, meaning that there's pretty much no oversight and no one knows what's going on with his finances. Any thoughts on that?
An expert in land management did a talk where he referred to traditional custodianship of land as delicately non-transparent. Now that is one of the big continuities from the old South Africa into the new, the idea that in these traditional areas or the former homelands or whatever, African people didn't want or deserve freehold title. It was all going to be, you know, nicely held for them in traditional institutions. And wouldn't you know it, as we transition to the new South Africa, not much has changed. The Ingonyama Trust is the single biggest land holding in the country. And some of that is the most fertile, well-watered.
This ain't the Karoo.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of politics around that. And I remember An ANC leader in KwaZulu-Natal, could it have been Minister Mkhunu saying that they don't have to worry about it because, you know, they're not going to go after traditional land with EWC? What I would say is that the kissing cousin of the expropriation agenda was the custodianship agenda. And if you want to see what that looks like, have a look at the Ingonyama Trust. Or you can't, because you know they don't have the documents together.
Yes. And of course, you know, it's essentially this land is locked up in this opaque thing where, you know, title is dodgy. I mean, sometimes some people say that the permission to occupy is in certain circumstances are not that bad, but in other cases they're clearly sort of on shaky ground. They're not nearly as good as freehold title. And, you know, why don't we start our land reform there? Formalize and at least firstly work out what is going on. That would be step one before we did anything radical. How much money has been spent, who owns what, who has governance over what, would be a very good way to start off.
Rather than
destroying private property rights.
No, absolutely. Look, and that relationship was quite frankly feudal. You know, if feudalism was what you like, then this is the model for you. But there have been concerns about taking in rents from residents, and it's not being put into things like building roads. It's kind of being used as personal revenue, and that's not great.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and of course we don't know because the annual report has not been submitted. Yeah. But anyway, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you found the show interesting. We'll see you tomorrow on the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.